One thing I love about this church is that we've always helped other churches. We helped plant a church in Nicaragua. We've helped with a church in the Dominican. We've helped plant a church in Romania and Panama and Mexico and Greece. That's Greece, New York, by the way. We've helped plant a church in Farmington. Like Leon Apple says, there is no competition between lighthouses. And we have been part of a lot of lighthousing. Most recently, Centerway started. They planted a church here in Victor. A church was planted called Centerway, but the pandemic hit, and they had to meet online for a year. And then after the pandemic, they couldn't find a place to meet, so we offered them our building, and for a year after that, it was one building and two congregations and no problem. And now, a church in Mendon invited them to come and be part of them, and the two congregations have merged, and they are thriving as they lead people towards Jesus. When they celebrated their fifth anniversary recently, Centerway mentioned Willowbrook Christian Church as part of their story. So cool. So we hosted a Brazilian street fair in our building a couple weeks back. About 300 Brazilians who now live in Rochester came through our building that day. And some of them came back this week to look around because they're trying to start a church and they don't have anywhere to meet. And they've heard that we do that kind of thing, we have that kind of attitude, and they wondered if we might want to help them. So on Friday, we had a bunch of important church leaders from Brazil visit our church property, which was cool, except that they spoke Portuguese. There were a couple ladies here gardening, planting flowers out in front, and I asked them if they happened to speak Portuguese. And one of them said, "Ha, I can barely speak English," which is not true. English is hard, though, I admit. I read this week that the word dusting means to remove dust or to add dust. It turns out that the antonym of dusting is dusting, which is weird, but all languages are weird. On my last missions trip to Mexico, I learned these words in Spanish, pijas, which means screws, pinzas, which means pliers, which you pull the screws out once you do them wrong. Desportes means ESPN is on television. Cheeto means cool, and Inferma means sick, and Alabanza means praise the Lord, I'm not sick right now. Tequila actually means potent, as in one tequila, two tequila, three tequila floor. Potent. Estoy bromeando means, I'm just kidding about that floor thing. Jesus, which either means Jesus or half the guys I met in Mexico. Verdes mole, which is green gravy, which is really good if they ever offer you that. And then there's rojo mole, which is terrible. And there are two words, no mas, which you need to say when they offer you more rojo mole. This month, we're studying Joseph's life as recorded in Genesis 37 through 50, and we're learning from Jacob's favorite son what we should do when we face things in life that we don't expect. I want to teach you two words today that you need to know. Two words that you need to know in life. They're Hebrew words. They're not Portuguese. They're not Spanish. They're not English. But there are words that you need to know because sometimes your life will take a turn for the better, and these words will then be important. But before we get there, a brief look back over our shoulder. Here is the story of Joseph thus far. Aging father, blended family, infant son, little Joey, daddy's favorite, fancy coat, interesting dreams, jealous stepbrothers, far from home, no protection, coat stripped, deep pit, chain gang, bloody coat, grieving father, south to Egypt. On our mission trip to Mexico, we spent some time visiting pyramids. Turns out Teotihuacan, Mexico, has pyramids. And as we drove up, the van driver, the guy driving, said, "Look, there." And we said, "Where?" And he said, "There, the pyramids." And we said, "Those are not pyramids. Those are piles of rock." He said, "Not all pyramids look like the ones in Egypt, you know." We didn't know. But those are the ones Joseph saw, the ones in Egypt, as he was dragged by in chains. Continuing our review, Potiphar's slave, Hard Worker, Moves Up, Eye Candy, Indecent Proposal, Oh No, Indecent Proposal, Oh No, Indecent Coat Stripped, Running Naked, Screaming Rape, Angry Husband, Jail Time, Hard Worker, Moves Up, Prison Ministry. I hope that all sounds familiar, because that's where we pick up Joseph's story today, with Joseph making the best of a bad situation, doing the best he can in prison. In Genesis 39, it says, Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him, and he showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Joseph had been his dad's favorite, and then he had been Potiphar's favorite because God was with Joseph, and whatever he did always worked out well, somehow always worked out. He was a good guy to have working for you. And when Mrs. Potiphar accused Joseph, and this young man ends up unfairly in prison, it's not long until he's the favorite of the prison's warden, and he's put in charge of everything in the prison. That's when, in Genesis 40, two guys get thrown in a cell with Joseph, the king's chef and the king's bartender. Apparently, they had done something that ticked off Pharaoh, in that both were involved with the king's food. They were both food people, preparing his food, safeguarding its edibility. I'm guessing that the reason they're there is either there was a near assassination attempt by poisoning, or these two guys tried to put Pharaoh on a low-fat diet. Either way, the king was furious with them. And off these two go to languish in jail and think about what they did wrong for a while. Genesis 40 says, when Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw that they were dejected. So he asked Pharaoh's officials who were in custody with him in his master's house, why do you look so sad today? Isn't that something? Joseph's life is really bad here. You would not want to trade with him. He is unfairly doing time in prison, and yet he notices other people's hurt. I was talking with a guy from our church this week, and he is having a really hard time in life right now. And while we were talking, he asked me how he could help another family in church who's having a really hard time right now. And I said, that's very cool that you ask, and I told him what I knew. Later in the week, I was talking with the family in church that guy was concerned about. And they asked me about another family in our church who's having a hard time right now and how they could help. That's so unusual. It's so easy. It's so normal when life is not going well to pay no attention to the people around you, to be so focused on how bad your life is you don't notice anyone else. And yet, here's Joseph walking in. He sees these two guys who are obviously hurting, and he says, what's up? To which they reply, we were all night with terrible dreams, weird dreams, creepy dreams, vivid, similar dreams, bad dreams. And Joseph, who knew that God had spoken to him in dreams, said, well, like what? And the wine steward, the guy who's in charge of the king's drink, said, well, in mine, there was a vine, and there were three branches, and there were grapes, and I squeezed them. And Joseph interrupted him, and he said, you know what happened when you squeeze grapes really hard? They let out a little wine. And the cupbearer said, yeah, really funny, Joseph, ha. So, anyways, the wine went into the cup, and I handed it to the king, and then I woke up. And God helped Joseph know what that dream meant. And Joseph said to the guy, nice, in 3 days, you're going to get your old job back. And Joseph said, and please, 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 when you get out, please tell the king that I was kidnapped from another country and I was locked down here in prison by mistake and I really just want to go home. And the guy said, sure, kid, if I ever get out of here, I will come back and get you the very next day. So the baker, who was also there, heard all that. And in the Andrew Lloyd Webber translation of the Bible, it says, next the baker rose to tell his dream, hoping it would have a similar theme. He said, there I was standing with baskets of bread. High in the sky, I saw birds overhead who flew to my baskets and ate every slice. Give me the message. Like his would be nice. Joseph responded, "Sad to say, your dream is not the kind of dream I'd like to get. Pharaoh has it in for you, your execution date is set." He said, "But don't rely on all I said I saw. It's just that I've never been wrong before." Joseph knew immediately that this guy's dream was a scene from Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, and this cook was going to be dead meat in 3 days, and the birds would be feasting on his carcass 3 days from then. By the way, do you know why crows can't board planes with two roadkill? Crows can't board planes with two roadkill because it's one carry-on per passenger. One carry-on per passenger. Joseph didn't tell that because it's not very good. Now, when Joseph heard this dream, he could have said, "Ooh, that's a tough, let me think about that one for like 3 or 4 days and I'll get back to you." But no, Joseph was a stand-up guy. He wanted to let the baker prepare for what's coming, so he told him. And sure enough, 3 days later, Pharaoh threw himself a birthday party. He restored the wine guy to his job, and he cut off the baker's head, just like Joseph had told them would happen. Did you hear about the guy who was dating the fortune teller? And when he proposed, he said, "Oh, Julia, will I marry you?" Deuteronomy 18 says, if anybody claims to predict the future for God, if anybody claims God's help in predicting the future, unless he says what he says is 100% exactly right every time, he's not speaking for God. God's prophets tell exactly right things every time. And Joseph was right on the money this time. The king's bartender was turned loose. And more important to Joseph, that meant Joseph would be getting out of prison pretty soon too. Because the guy said he'd get him out. And Joseph waited all that next day, but the guy didn't come back. And he said, well, he probably went to his family, tell him that he got out. The end of day 3, Joseph thought, well, he probably had a lot of work to catch up on. End of week 3, Joseph's thinking, did he get sick? Did he go on vacation? It's been 3 weeks. The last line on page 40 of Genesis says, the chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. And now we're 3 months away from it happening, and Joseph goes, I can't believe it. The dude totally forgot about me. And the first line on page 41 of Genesis, the first line says, when 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. 2 years. God's timetable usually does not match ours. It certainly didn't match Joseph's. He was expecting God was going to spring him the next day. Now we're 2 full years later. That's when Pharaoh had 2 nightmares in 1 night. We call that a double dreader. It really bothered him, 2 nightmares in 1 night. So he called in his psychics. The Pharaoh called in his sleep experts and his palm readers, and he told them his dreams, but nobody knew what they meant. And they did not dare tell him something that wasn't true, because that was something you only did once with the Pharaoh. I refer you back to the baker. So nobody's offering any dream interpretations to the Pharaoh when suddenly the cupbearer, who's standing right there, remembers Joseph. And he says, oh, excuse me, Mr. King, sir, excuse me. I knew this Jewish kid a couple years back. He's really good at this. And the Pharaoh said, great, do you think he'll be hard to locate? And the cupbearer said, probably not. So Joseph was found and cleaned up and brought, and the Pharaoh said, so I had some dreams and I heard that you can interpret them. And Joseph said, nope, can't. But the God I serve knows everything, and sometimes he tells me, so fire away. And the Pharaoh said, okay, so I'm having this dream and I got 7 fat cows coming up out of the Nile River. But they got eaten by 7 scrawny ones, and the scrawny cows consumed the fat cows and they stayed skinny. And then I woke up, and then I went back to sleep, and then I had this dream. 7 beautiful ears of corn, and they were growing, and they were so healthy, and they were so luscious, but 7 lousy ears of corn grew up right underneath them and sucked them up, and they still stayed terrible, lousy ears of corn. And the Pharaoh said, so what's that all about? And Joseph said, well, I can tell you exactly what that means. By the way, I think dreams still mean something. Still today, I think dreams have meaning. If you have weird and unsettling dreams, it means you should not eat beans at supper. You should drink less coffee before you go to bed, or maybe you should look into MyPillow sheets or Select Comfort mattresses or something. In the Bible, all of God's dreams came complete with interpretation or interpreter to explain them. Not once did a dream ever contradict something God had already said. So if you ever wake up after a dream and you have a feeling based on that dream that you should go do something that you know is wrong, do everybody you know a favor, turn over and go back to sleep. God occasionally did send dreams. Pharaoh got two in one night. Joseph was instantly given understanding of them. And turns out these two dreams were a long-range weather forecast. If Scott Hetzko was Joseph, he would have said to Pharaoh, here are the next 14 years of your life. 7 glorious years of harvesting, followed by 7 of the worst years of famine ever. And while Joseph was explaining all that, he threw out a couple good ideas that occurred to him while he was talking. He said, you know, if you would tax the people about 20% of the crops during the good years, they'd never even notice because you're making so much, and you would have plenty to spare to give people during the bad years. And Pharaoh liked Joseph's interpretation and his ideas. And he said, to quote a Starfleet captain that had yet to be born, Pharaoh said, good thinking, number one, make it so. And in that moment right there, God flipped the script. And Joseph went from jailhouse to penthouse. God had orchestrated Joseph's rising from cleaning the outhouses to overseeing the White House. In one moment, because of God's involvement, Joseph became the most influential man in the world. Now, the day before this happened, Joseph's thinking, wow, it has been 2 years since I really thought I was going to get out of here. Wow. The next day, he left prison for good, and here are some of the lovely parting gifts that God gave him as he left. Number one, Joseph got racks and racks of the finest in Egyptian ware. He has lots of nice coats now. Number two, he was given a gold chain around his neck. He's been wearing chains for a while, but not like this one. Number three, he's given unlimited use of the Pharaoh's American Express card. Strike that. Egyptian Express card. Number four, Joseph is given his own chariot with a man running in front yelling, here comes Joseph, here comes Joseph. They didn't have horns back then. Number five, he's given a new name. Joseph Jacobson is now Mr. Zaphnath Paaneah, which means in Egypt, king of dreams. Number six, he's given airplane tickets to anywhere in the world and control over everyone he meets on every trip. Number seven, he's given a wife. And for the next 7 years, Egypt prospered like crazy. And Pharaoh was happy and Joseph lived in luxury for 7 years. And for 7 years after that, Joseph used his position and his power to help Pharaoh save the world. Literally, they supplied food to countries from all around the world. Egypt saved the world. Nations were saved from starvation because of Joseph. Joseph started today's sermon falsely accused and rotting in a foreign dungeon. Joseph finishes today's sermon as literally the most important person on earth. Huh. That's quite a change in his life. 3 points that I think can help us today that I would like to make from all of that. Number one, God determines if and when we prosper. Trust his timing. God had given Joseph a picture of the end at the very beginning, people bowing down to him. Joseph had seen that was going to happen, and it was true. It happened in a really spectacular way, but it took a long time. He had his dream when he was 17. He became king of the world at age 30. But a lot had to happen in those 13 years. God had to get Joseph set up just right. He had to learn the Egyptian language. He had to learn the Egyptian culture. He had to learn math and management and self-control and patience and politics, all of which Joseph would need to know to do what God had in store for him to do. And it must have been so frustrating, especially there at the end. He was so close to getting out when he helped the cupbearer. And then he had to wait for 2 more years for his training to be complete. But he trusted God to come through when God would come through. I heard a comedian one time say, the comedian said he loves escalators because they never break. He said, if the escalator stops working, it becomes stairs. He said, you will never in your life see a sign that says escalator temporarily out of service. You'll just see a sign that says escalator temporarily stairs. And then you'll see another sign next to that one that says, sorry for the convenience. God's plan for us is never out of order. When things aren't going like we wish in our lives, God uses that for our good. And then he posts a sign saying, sorry for the convenience. For example, Dana Curry and Heather Mercer were Baylor University students. They went to Kabul, Afghanistan. They went to be humanitarian workers, which is legal, and to build friendships, which is also legal, and to tell Muslim people about Jesus, which is not legal. That's why they went. And they were doing okay for 6 months, but they really wanted to do more. They wanted to spend quality time with women in Afghanistan, and they wanted to take the gospel to the Taliban, and they wanted people all over the world to pray for Afghani people. One day, Dana and Heather were arrested by Taliban. And it was rough. It was really rough, frightening. Their captors took them away from everything and took everything away from them. And the Taliban soldiers that had captured them decided they wanted to watch Dana and Heather's DVDs. They wanted to see what they were showing to people. And that's how a whole bunch of Taliban soldiers ended up watching the Jesus movie. God said, sorry for the convenience. Dana and Heather were imprisoned for the next 4 months with 30 Afghani women. They were forced to live 24/7 with 30 Afghani women, which made them smile. And God said, sorry for the convenience. And when their arrest was making the news, when people all over the world heard what had happened to these two girls, people all over the world started to pray for them and for their work. And for the Afghani people. And when they were rescued and interviewed on television and radio and magazines all over the world, they got to tell everybody what God was doing in Afghanistan, and they invited other people to join in, which is exactly what Dana and Heather wanted to try to make happen there, and God said, sorry for the convenience. God's plan for our involvement in what he's got going on in the world is way better than we can ask or imagine for ourselves. So trust his timing with your life. It's always perfect. Lesson number two, when you prosper in life, you can hurt those who hurt you. Don't do it. We don't have enough time to do this one right this week, but it'll come up next week too, because it's big. Things dealing with graciousness and forgiveness, those things change the world. You know what impresses me about Joseph? He did not take revenge when he could take revenge. At the bottom of page 41 on Genesis, he is now the second most powerful man in the world. Joseph is more powerful than any other man on earth except for Pharaoh. You know what that means? You know who now works for Joseph? The cupbearer. Mr. Short-Term Memory. Mr. Oh yeah, I'll get you out of here the next day. The wine guy who now answers to Joseph. Who could say, Joseph could say, why don't you go check out the cellar? The wine cellar? No, the cellar. Why don't you go check out the dungeon cellar? Let's say you check it out for like, 2 years. Or he could say, hey, wine guy, I had a dream last night, and in it you had 3 baskets of bread on your head. Sorry. You know who else answers to Joseph now? That's right, Mrs. Potiphar. Maybe Joseph falsely accuses her of not paying her 20% crop tax like everybody owes. And the fine for the crime is to do the time. Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. P, you're going to jail. Yeah, you rot in there next to the wine guy. One of the things that success gives you is a chance to hit back. Your home life was bad. You prosper in life, you can ignore your parents like they ignored you. Somebody makes your job really tough. And then you get promoted, oh my, now you hand out work assignments. Your ex tries to destroy you, and then a new judge takes the case and is sympathetic to you. You can write your own ticket now. What will you do? I heard about Janine Brooks, whose car got run into 10 years ago. The other driver who drove right into her, got out of his car, confronted her, yelled at her, threatened at her, swore at her, and then took off without paying, without leaving anything. Just drove away from the scene of the accident that he had caused. So she had to pay to fix the car herself, which really set her back. She was in dentistry school. She didn't have any money, but somehow she survived the financial hardship and she completed her schooling. 10 years later, Janine Brooks is now a dentist. That same man walked into her office. He needed a tooth pulled. Janine instantly recognized him. He did not recognize her. She pulled the tooth. She said it wouldn't hurt a bit. She lied. When God flips the script, it is tempting to want to get even. But Paul says in Romans 12, do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what's right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Don't take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath, for it's written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. I met a guy on the missions trip that I was talking about before, whose name, coincidentally, was Joseph. A really funny dude. He was funny. We were building some stuff, and the Mexicans kept giving us their measurements in centimeters. And Joe said, you know, if God meant us to use the metric system, Jesus would have had 10 disciples, not 12. We were building walls. We were building walls with metal studs. Metal studs, which Joe really doesn't like to work with. And he said so loudly, foully, regularly, swearingly. And when we would all look at, we're on a mission trip. Joe. One time he said, yeah, I know. Jesus was a carpenter too, and he never swore. I know. That's because he never worked with metal studs. At one point on the trip, Joe told me he tries really hard never to retaliate. In life, he tries never to retaliate because, he said, vengeance belongs to God, and I don't want to steal anything that belongs to him. Smart dude. Kind of like Joseph, who left the past in the past and let God sort that whole thing out. No, really, Joseph saved the world. In the Old Testament, he literally saved the world, and he never took revenge. In the New Testament, Jesus saves the world in a different way, but the same, and he too left revenge to his Father. If you want to make the greatest impact with your life, you need to learn how to forgive. And next week, we'll look at how you can get better at that if you think that's important too. Lesson number three, last lesson. When things go suddenly well in life, you need to remember two words. We always assume that it's hardest to follow God when life is rough. And it can be. But how many guys in the Bible drop the ball on the way to the end zone? Oswald Sanders says, not every man can carry a full cup. Like David, a giant killer, a big war hero, king of the world, tripped over a sunbather. Like Solomon, the wisest man ever, the ruler of all the world, forgot which God put him there. Like Judas, a follower of Jesus, a miracle worker, a healer, a demon slayer, the trusted treasurer who sold out for a bag of coins. Often when things are going well, we get into all kinds of trouble. We start to overestimate ourselves. We start to underestimate others. We start to forget God. Paul Harvey told a story one time about the Italian sailing team, and they were competing in the America's Cup at Australia. They were sponsored that year. The team was sponsored by Gucci. They had Gucci pants, Gucci shoes, Gucci jackets, Gucci wallets, Gucci goo. On a non-racing day, this Italian sailing team decided to rent a Jeep and take off into the outback to look to see if they could see a kangaroo. And sure enough, they drove off-road way out in the bush, and as they were driving, a kangaroo hopped out right in front of their Jeep, and before they could stop, they hit the animal, and they knocked it to the ground. All the guys jumped out and ran over to see the motionless animal, and one of them said, great, we wanted to see one, not kill one. They talked about what they should do. They finally decided they should just head back and report the accident. That's all that they could do. But before they left, one of the sailors said, hey, wait. We're here. We have a kangaroo. Let's at least take a picture for our families back home to see. So they lifted up the animal. They stood in line. They lifted up the animal. They held the kangaroo in the middle of all of them. But right before they took the picture, the driver had a brilliant idea. He said, wait. How about I put a Gucci jacket on the kangaroo? Then we'll take the picture. It'll be a great advertisement. So he took off his coat, and somehow they got it on the kangaroo. The Italian team then held up the kangaroo again. As they got ready to take the picture, the stunned animal woke up, which scared the guys holding it to death, and they dropped it, and the kangaroo took off into the bush. And when they realized what just happened, after they were stunned, but they started to laugh, and they laughed and they laughed, except for one guy, the coatless driver, who ran after the kangaroo. And when he returned minutes later, breathless, he said, I couldn't catch him. And they laughed more. And he said, no, my wallet was in that coat. And they laughed even harder. But they stopped laughing when he said, and so were the keys. All right, according to Snopes, that's a made-up story. But the reason I tell it is, aside from the obvious connection with Joseph losing his coat all the time, what I think is the best part of that whole story is when the kangaroo got home that night wearing the coat. Can you imagine? He comes hopping in, and the others go, whoa, nice coat. Sweet jacket, is that design? Oh, yeah, it's Gucci. Wow, Gucci, that's sharp. You, Daroo, woo. Do you think that that kangaroo that night considered himself somehow better than all the other kangaroos? Do you think he bragged about his coat? Did he boast of his cleverness in acquiring this coat? Did he regale his fellow kangaroos with stories of his coat-getting exploits? Probably not. He got that coat because it was almost forced on him. It was given to him. The Bible says it's not much different for us. When we have nice coats, it's because they've been given to us. James says, every nice thing you have has been given to you from above. Except for the most part, we're not as smart as a dazed kangaroo. We tend to think that all the good stuff in our life is a result of our doing. We've earned it. We deserve it. We worked hard to get this. It's ours. It's going to stay ours. Thank you very much. It's ours. Except the truth that we see in Joseph's story is that the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. And the only reason you have the good that you have in life is because God is the most generous guy. And he loves you like crazy. And he wants you so much to learn how to live a satisfying life. And he gives you stuff along the way. Joseph, who continued to trust God through hard times, who hung on to God for 13 really bad years, when his life swung around, he got rich and famous and powerful and known and married. He got married. And when Mrs. Joseph gave birth to their first son, Joseph named him Manasseh. Roughly translated, Manasseh means God has arranged for me to forget all my troubles. Roughly translated, Manasseh means, wow, life can suck, and God can change that all around. Life had changed. Manasseh means, I'm doing way better right now. It was not always like this, but wow, is it good now. And when Mrs. Joseph conceived again, they had a second son, and Joseph named their second son Ephraim. Roughly translated, Ephraim means God has made me to prosper. Roughly translated, Ephraim means, wow, am I ever doing great? Life is good, and I owe everything I have to God. And what Joseph did by giving his two sons their names, Joseph made himself say every day, many times a day, the two things that he wanted to remember. In good times, he needed to remember Manasseh and Ephraim. Number one, it wasn't always like it is now. Number two, don't ever forget who gave this to me. And I'm not saying we should name our kids, boy, am I lucky not to be there anymore. Because that would be a lot of words to say every time you call your son. Boy, am I lucky not to be there anymore. But Joseph named his son that, and every time he yelled, hey, Manasseh, pick up your toys, he remembered that his life had always not been exactly like it is right now. And I'm not saying you should call your second child, God is the guy who is giving me my wonderful life, don't ever forget that. Because that would be a lot of words to say. But Joseph named his second son that, and every time he said, Ephraim, time for lunch, he remembered that all his goodness comes from God. Joseph knew that God helped him interpret the dreams. Joseph knew that God inspired the ideas about the crop tax. Joseph knew that God had led him to Egypt. Joseph knew that God had given him his brains and his body and his talents and his opportunities and his blessings. It was all from God. He knew his life was Manasseh and Ephraim. The key to Joseph's whole life is that he knew God was helping him. And later, Jesus would study Joseph's story and learn the lessons Joseph had learned. And the key to Jesus' whole life is that he knew God was helping him. And I have studied Jesus' story and Joseph's story. And the key to my whole life is that I know God is helping me. The key to your whole life
Do you know it? Let's pray.